So, shall we look at this evening?
So I'm having this morning. I was really noticing just a lot of sadness and anger, and decided that I was just going to let it be there instead of doing what I normally do, which is to immediately try and fill my day with a million things that are going to fix it and resolve it and make it go away. Mm-hmm. And so I just sort of took a mental health day and didn't like do anything, productive, so to speak. And I read and I baked a little bit, but there was this nagging experience of like guilt and shame over what I was doing, and then this experience of, you know, writing my journal about, no, I'm also really proud of myself, because this is something that's kind of a hard thing for me to do, is to take care of myself, so I'm going to be proud of myself. And like this back and forth, almost like just watching these conversations in my head, it was exactly like watching conversations in my head about, no, you should be ashamed of what you're doing, and even going so far as, gosh, what a privileged position you're in to have the kind of life where you can afford to just take a day. There's a lot of people in the world who couldn't just take a day even if they wanted to, and what a luxury, and wow, how, and on and on and on. But then I couldn't talk myself into doing something productive. So it was like this giant cluster all day of, there were moments where I could be present and really feel like, oh, it's really nice to be here with my book and petting the cat and trying to soothe myself. But as soon as I settled into that, something else came in. And so I was noticing that. And then right before I came here, which I'm so glad that this was happening tonight, because it didn't happen on Sunday or Thursday, so I was like ready. I could feel a difference in my life in general when, you know, we have our little breaks. So I'm always really happy when we get back together. So right before I left, my husband came home, and I've been like, you know, he's got a lot of repressed anger that he has to deal with, and da-da-da. And I noticed that he said, like, I couldn't figure out, one of the things I wanted to do earlier was play some video games. And I couldn't figure out how to play our video games, because I don't know how to set it up. It's something that he does. And he wasn't there. So I was like, can you teach me how to do it? And I felt like he was judging me for not knowing how to do it. And I'm still, right now, I'm like, was that me projecting that he was thinking I'm an idiot? Or was he actually thinking that? And if he was, who cares? And like, just again, just on the drive over, I found a new thing to sort of cycle about. The other thing that came up today during my day of being at home was, I have a box of old journals. And I'm doing this thing where every day, it's called the Minimalist Challenge. It's a game that I'm playing with a couple of my friends. And every day you get rid of like one thing on December 1st, two things on December 2nd. And just by the end of the month, you've gotten rid of like tons of stuff. Whether you donate it or upcycle it or whatever. But we're in this process of getting rid of stuff. So I've got a box and I'm looking through these old journals. And the thought processes from my journal from 2006, 2009, 2013, I'm looking at it and I'm like, it's the same. And it was such a bummer. Like, the other funny thing is that my ex-boyfriend's name is John, and my husband's name is John. And so you literally can't tell if you didn't know
which John it was.
It's the same relationship. And I'm like, what? And there's this feeling of, why do I keep doing this? You know, not like they're bad men or anything like that. I don't mean that. I just mean, I find myself in these situations and in these relationships that are, in so many ways, they just recycle the same stuff. And they just bring up the same stuff. And quite frankly, I really just like some new stuff to work with, because I'm tired of all of the repetitive stuff.
Okay, so a couple of things. So let's take three issues. So let's take them one at a time, right? So the first one, here's what I would recommend if that happens again. Because what you saw is really, I mean, you said it from the person in it, as opposed to stepping outside and looking at the process. So I'm reflecting it from the process you're in, right? So we look at duality. Mm-hmm. And duality is, oh, you're not feeling good. You need to take care of yourself and do all of this stuff for yourself. Okay, I'll do that. No. You know, when you do take care of yourself, actually you should feel guilty. Okay, well, I'll try to do something. No. Right?
Right.
So just to get that is a classic duality. And the only outcome of a duality is to have someone caught in the middle of it suffering. So the thing that the reason why we teach duality as one of the building blocks of ego is to be able to recognize when you're in it, right? And part of neither of those sides are right choices. We always frame them as two bad choices, right? Because in either case, you feel bad. Yeah. If you take the day off, it's going to make you feel bad for doing that. Mm-hmm. If you don't take the day off, it's going to make you feel bad because you're sad and angry and you can't deal with that and you have to be productive. And throw a little bit of self-hate in that and the picture is complete, right? Who else has the privilege to do this?
Mm-hmm.
Kind of orientation.
Mm-hmm.
So what we do in awareness practice is you noticed all of that, right? I mean, that's the real step. The next step would be to go, I'm in a duality.
Mm.
That's a disidentification. It's not real. I'm not trying to fix it. I'm not trying to solve for it. I'm not trying. So you started off with, I'm not dealing with whatever it is that's... I'm not going to cope with the anger and sadness, right? I'm not going to do the things that cause me to distract myself from that. But when you've made that other decision to take care of yourself, as you said in the second issue, it just takes that content and puts it into the duality,
mm-hmm.
right? So if you're in a duality, then the process of duality can take any content, cereal or no cereal. Use the blender, don't use the blender. Whatever it is, go to group, don't go to group. It's always available. And here's the thing that I would suggest the next time is to pick up the recorder. And if you really want to be with the feelings of anger and sadness, to be with it. Right, just pick it up and say, I feel really angry. I'm really angry. I'm really sad. And every time, and then take care of yourself, and every time the conversation comes up, pick up the recorder again and say, I'm here with you, Autumn.
I don't know why I have such a visceral, like, rejection of the recorder.
Believe me, you and anyone, so the level of resistance to recording and listening is proportional to the level of benefit. It's not you who has a resistance to the recorder.
Mm.
It's the conditioned system that has a resistance to the recorder, and you don't have to identify with it.
Mm.
Because if you picked up the recorder and started to talk into the recorder, there's a way you're getting out of the conversation.
Mm.
And that's what it doesn't want you to do. So all the resistance is because... What happens with obsessive thinking
yeah.
is that it's the energy being dragged into maintaining a thought pattern. And the thought patterns develop more and more and more energy because there's attention going towards getting them to be repeated, and the attention on them produces more energy, right? And at some point, there's a tremendous level of resistance because what you need to do in order to overcome that energy... Sometimes you can't tip the balance unless you actually physically pick up the recorder and start to talk. So when you talk, the energy that goes into the thought pattern gets dissipated out. And so you're not caught in that repetitive thinking again. That's what the recorder does. It breaks the circuit of thinking. And it actually allows you to get in touch with whatever's going on for you that the thought process is preventing you from being in touch with. You'll just talk it out. And as you start talking, you'll actually say and see things that you haven't noticed before, and you will process through it. But as long as you don't talk about it, then it's basically going to keep that energy swirling on the surface level of the thought pattern.
So two things come up when you say that. One is, so what would be the difference between recording and listening versus talking to a friend on the phone or talking to a therapist or something like that?
Well, it's not just, there are two things there. You can talk to someone else. But the point is, when you talk to someone else, you can listen to the person who is talking.
Oh, right, yeah.
And that's really the thing that you also want to do.
And that's the part that I resist, because on Friday night last week, I finally was in such a state. We talked about that before, like I have to get really upset before I finally pick up the recorder, because I'll think about it 86 times over the course of a week, but do it maybe once. But I did it last Friday, and somebody called. I was using my phone as the recorder, and somebody called, which breaks the recording. And my immediate thought was, oh, thank God. Oh, thank God, I don't have to do this.
Well, the thing that you want to do there, Autumn, is this is how I learned, trained to record and listen.
Mm-hmm.
Where Sherry often says, don't learn to meditate when you're meditating. Right? You wouldn't learn how to run, you wouldn't learn to start running in a marathon.
Mm-hmm.
So when I first started recording and listening, I had so much resistance to it that for 30 days, all I did was a 2-minute recording in the morning, which I would listen to, because it's only 2 minutes. I can listen to a 2-minute recording. I listen to the 2-minute recording in the evening and make another 2-minute recording. The morning, I would listen to that 2-minute recording and make another 2-minute recording. So that I got into break. What is the smallest unit of time that you don't have resistance listening to? Mm-hmm. Train yourself for 30 days making a recording of that small time.
Okay.
And listen to it, because it's a skill. At some point, you won't even think about, oh God, I have to listen to a 2-minute recording. Right? At which point you move it to 3 minutes.
Okay.
But it's a skill that you have to train yourself into, and it's completely worth it to save this human being.
Just like, that's
meditation.
How I did with meditation.
That's exactly right.
It started with 2 minutes.
Yeah. And so then,
makes so much sense.
Then I'll tell you, I remember doing that with my journals myself. 14 years of the same process.
Same thing. Different content. Same thing.
You have 7 karmic processes that you can read through every journal.
Yeah.
So 2 things about that. One is, the person who journals is the same person. That's why we record and listen. Because there are so many people here that we can access through the recorder, but the journal is a journaler.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
So there's only one person writing that journal, and they have the same experience of life.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's one thing to notice. And then the other thing to notice is, our karmic process, what we get upset about, I can tell you, I have 7 karmic processes. I can tell you what 7 those are. And they just cycle through with different content and different depth. So it's not a coincidence that it hasn't changed over the years. That the process of karma and suffering for you is unique to you and hasn't changed. But that doesn't mean you haven't changed.
Mm.
But the person who is writing the journal is referencing a karmic process and is not writing about life that has changed.
Mm.
Right? And so the immediate place we go to is, I've made no progress for 7 years. It's the same stuff over and over again. Yes, it is the same stuff over and over again. But that's not the point. It's like, is there joy, more and more joy in your life? But that's not being recorded.
Mm.
And we do the love letter process at the end of every day, write and record a love letter, which you listen to in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
It could be 5 lines or whatever. But what we're training there is to see you through the eyes of love. And when love is looking, the process is dynamic. It's what happened to me today. So the journal is a very static record of a very limited perspective on your life. But you want to be in the process of your life, not in the narrative of your life. And there's no record of that.
Can you say that?
Well, that I'm alive. I enjoyed this moment breathing. I saw that bird and I was just taken into a flight of fancy. And I had this fabulous moment with my son. And then we had this alive argument with my husband. And, right? That there's a juice to living that doesn't get translated into any record. Mm-hmm. Because we don't tend to record those. So if you judge your life by your journal, then you've got to feel bad because nothing has changed. But it isn't a record of your life.
Mm.
it's a record of a karmic process which doesn't change.
So if the person who journals is the journaler, then would it stand to reason that the person who records is the recorder?
No, okay. Not at all. Because when you record, you don't know who's there. Only when you listen, do you know who showed up for the recording. Mm-hmm. Because if you're angry, there might be one person who's there. If you're joyful and the person who's the baker is recording, they'll be recording completely differently than the journaler's recording, okay, than the mom that's recording, or the partner that's recording, right?
Okay.
So you have access to more of yourself through a recording practice than you do through a journaling one.
Okay. Can you say that 2-minute morning, 2-minute night thing again? So I can.
Yeah. So pick up the recorder at 8:30. 8:30 to 8:32, one recording, anything you want to record. I'm grateful for this. I'm watching the birds out of my window. Doesn't matter what you record. You don't listen to that. So the day you start, you'd make one recording. And at night, you'd listen to that recording and make another 2-minute recording.
And is it all right hand?
Yeah, you're just learning how to record. No right hand, left hand thing.
Okay.
You're just training yourself in the skill of being able to pick up the recorder at a set time. Whenever I say I'm going to record, I record for 2 minutes, and whenever I say listen, I'm going to listen for 2 minutes. But 2 minutes was my thing. You might say, I can't listen to a recording more than 30 seconds long.
Okay.
In which case, do a 30-second recording.
Okay.
But the point is that what you're chipping away at is the ability to let the voice take over and resist an activity.
Okay.
That's all. It's like, I mean, I did that with flossing my teeth. When I lived in India, nobody flossed their teeth. I hate flossing my teeth. But now I'm up to the point where I could floss my teeth no matter what the voice says. Because even today, 20 years later, it's going to say, really, do you want to floss your teeth? How about just do the first 4 teeth and then... Because I hate it.
I get that. So is there no listening in this 2-minute training?
There is. You always listen to the last 2-minute recording you did.
Okay, so I make it in the morning, listen to it at night, and when I'm recording at night, am I responding to that, or am I
just
recording?
No, just recording. Anything you want to record. Record a poem, you could record a peace quote and what you saw about it. You can record something interesting that happened in the day. But you have to make it 2 minutes, not more. Whatever you decide is the smallest unit of time that you can listen
to. And it could be anger and...
Oh, sure. Anything you want.
Wow. Okay, and that's going to get me somewhere.
It'll, as far as I know, it'll hopefully get you to being trained in recording and listening.
Okay.
Because what you're also doing when you're doing that is watching your process, right? Oh, that was an interesting recording. I really want to listen to it again.
Hmm.
Or, I don't want to listen. I don't want to record. And something comes in and says, Ada, 2 minutes, that's all it takes. Who's that? Right? You start to notice your process around it while you're training with it as well. It has to be 30 days.
Sure.
And the way we train on it, any 30-day program, you miss a day, you restart to one. And then see how it goes.
Okay.
And no self-hate in any of it if you don't do it. All right. Let me know. Thank you.
Thank you.
Tim.
That was really helpful. Something that I've been looking at recently is old age, sickness, and death, that old chestnut, and how it's fine when it's out there and it's other people, but when it's happening to me, all of a sudden...
Not so good.
Not so hot. No, not... And... it's not like everything happened at once, but the story is like I had a birthday and then the warranty just ran out. Like I fractured my left foot, I have an eye surgery coming up in January, I have high blood pressure, like I've got content, like I have no shortage of content. And what's been happening, two things, I realize as I'm talking, I do another spiritual practice as well. I've been fairly absent from that one and this one, and so I kind of
absent from which two?
this practice and the other, like, so other spiritual practice that I do.
Uh-huh.
And so it's just, that just dropped in.
That you're absent from both of them in this content.
In this, yeah.
Yeah.
In a way. Yeah, like it's just been a few weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Since, so I, but.
Which is very normal, right, Tim?
Yeah.
Because this is classic. In the important things in life, like your finances, your relationship, and your health,
mm-hmm.
you don't consult spiritual practice.
No.
You just consult ego.
Right.
Everywhere else, which isn't that important,
right.
then you can go to spiritual practice. I mean, that's what we're conditioned to, right? How can it doesn't help you get anything done. So it's not going to help you manage anything.
Right?
So it's the thing that you do outside of. And when you really want advice, come to me.
Right. So it's probably fairly predictable what happened after that. Like, I completely fell into the story and identification and the listening of, well, 10 years ago, you should have turned this way, but you didn't. And I just bought it, you know, depression. Everything at one point, to me, it's funny now because I do, a shift has occurred, you know.
You're here.
I'm here, which the voices were like, no, you have someplace else to be. And I'm here because, you know, one of the things that dropped in all of this is maybe I should get a second opinion.
Yeah.
Right? You know, which is why I come here.
Yeah.
It's like, what's the second opinion? But I picked up the recorder and I did, you know, I talked into it and then I switched my left hand and I know that I just had nothing, right? And I was like, wow, this must be so, if your mentor is like, yeah, I got nothing, you know, and I know that's not the problem, what was really going on, but it just, yeah, everything came down and started going into things like, you know, if you weren't around, you know, your wife could find somebody more responsible. You're probably not a really good influence on your kids because, you know, I'm a stay-at-home dad and my job is in the arts, so it doesn't pay very much. So you're not really modeling responsibility. It just went on and on and on. And that's where the whole, like, okay, second opinion thing came in, because, you know, there's all sorts of places that ego wants me to go. Like, oh, quit all that. Go back to school. Just make these decisions. And one thing that was clear was that I'm not really in a place to make decisions from that place.
Yeah.
That's not the place to.
Yeah, so a couple of things about that, right, Tim? Mm-hmm. So one, your practice held even through that.
Mm-hmm.
Because you didn't go with ego in the final You chose to get a second opinion. Something got through to you.
Right.
Despite the level of identification and self-hate that was going on, to say, no, Tim, don't listen to that.
Right.
So that is something to be really grateful for. And that's why we practice in the good times.
Right? Yeah.
Because if you weren't, there's a measure of our, the measure of our, I mean, grace could get you too, right? But the point is, and oftentimes that arrives for us out of the blue, that we get actually, you know, handed something and pulled out of something when we're least expecting it. And we're tremendously grateful for that. But in those really dark places, in those difficult and challenging places, if we have practiced in the good times, something like that will come through. Awareness will register.
Mm-hmm.
This is just crappy, right?
Yeah.
You just need a second opinion. You can't go with any of this. So let's go find you that, Tim. And that's the reason we want to cultivate that relationship with a mentor that you don't recognize.
Yeah.
The someone who's looking out for you, even when the human being is in the pits of despair.
Right.
So just to acknowledge that whatever practice there was before that absence of practice, where you went off the cliff, there was one of those threads that brought you back.
Yeah.
And that actually, in hard times, motivates us to practice more in the times which are not hard. Because you can remember the times when it's really hard, and the extent to which, when you're most vulnerable, you get most creamed. That's when the voices want to come after you, right? Take you out. Basically decide that you're a worthless piece of whatever and that you're not needed around, and let's just extract the maximum suffering from this human being.
Right.
Because you don't have the reserves to combat it. And what practice allowed you to do is to come back to practice. And if you keep practicing, what we notice is in those really, really hard times, what's available to us to practice with is more. You won't go that far now.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes we have to prove that to ourselves, right? That we're in hard places. And so I want to practice. Now I want to practice more to get through this hard place. And then when the times are really good, practice even more. Because as you said, age, sickness, and death are going to come.
Right.
Right. I mean, and it's not getting less probable. Actually, as we age, it's getting more probable.
Right. Right.
And so if the big guns are going to be in the future, we might as well get all of our practice ducks in a row so that we're ready for the big guns showing up. Because they will. It's a guaranteed fact of existence. And this keeps us in the hope that it'll never happen to us.
Yeah.
Right? As you said, out there... Yeah, I know that intellectually. In here, oh my God, I wasn't ready for this.
Right, and you pretty much nailed my the past week or two. It was just complete despair, and or just a really slowed down, and it was surprising how fast everything happened to me. Like, just what? Like, it just felt like everything was falling apart, but. And, you know, also talking to other friends who aren't maybe acquainted with our practice, it's like, yeah, it sucks. Everything sucks. You're just going to work out and, you know, hopefully, you know, keep from wasting away. And it just really fed this, well, what's the point then?
Yeah.
If this is all, if it's doom and gloom, then what's the point to keep this all going?
Yeah. Well, here was my dark night of the soul realization, Tim. There isn't a point. And that is the ultimate fact you have to face up to. When we look at life as it is, it has no meaning.
Right.
It has no reason. And in some way, it's completely indifferent to me.
Right.
And that shape of human existence, which is age, sickness, and death, the fact that we have a mind that causes us to suffer means that the human experience is not very different from one person on the other to the other. The karma is going to go. To be able to not, to be able to face that right on is the most terrifying thing ever. But it's a terrifying place we have to get to, because that's how life is. Right? Then wanting it to be different than it is a cop-out that's not helpful. Right? Because it takes you to, let this take me out. I'd rather exit than face the fact of my existence.
Mm-hmm.
And if I can't face the terrible, I can't face the ecstasy. Because I'm just avoiding all of it. I don't have receptors to look at it directly. Right? And so to me, the dark and challenging winter months of our spiritual practice are gifts. Because only then do we actually see how life is. I give up. I surrender. I don't have anything.
Mm-hmm.
Now, can I see life as it is and still have the light shine in me? Is it still enough? Because if I get to that dark place and I don't die, that's the light that I'm living for. But we don't ever get a measure of what life is and how to live until you face up to the fact that you have no choice.
Mm-hmm.
in how life goes, in altering the shape of human experience, or altering the shape of the karma, or altering the trajectory of age, sickness, and death. It's an inevitable unfolding. It's the darkest place in the spiritual practice, and it's the best place to get to the light.
Yeah, I hear the words. And the other part is I've experienced, it's hard to put it into words, I've experienced, I feel like, going through those dark times and having an experience of joy, enlightenment, stuff like
that. No, not joy.
Not
just crap. It just feels crappy. It's full of doubt and horror. It's hard. It's not joyful.
No, I mean coming through on the other side. Like I have experiences, you know, in our practice of feeling joyful, of feeling like I've gotten through.
Yes, that it's over.
Yeah.
Yeah, but this never gets over.
Yeah, I guess that's.
I permanently
I'm not sure what to do. Yeah.
There isn't anything you can do.
Yeah.
That's the whole point.
Right.
Because this whole orientation is getting away from my mortality. From the inevitability of. I somehow think that as the architect of my life, I can keep all of it at bay, I can manage it, I don't have to listen to it, I can ignore it, and then suddenly I have it.
Yes.
It's what is going on for me. And so if I've spent most of my life avoiding it, then I have no reserves on how to be with it.
I have no experience.
It's a scramble. And now you've got to bring out skills that you haven't trained for in the Ivy League. Right?
Yeah, okay.
That's why you practice for 2 minutes in the recording and listening, so that when I'm in that abyss, I can do 2 minute recording that will get me out of that abyss, because it is so part of what I do that the voices can't take it away from me.
So this practice is the practice of coming up against that.
It's the practice of being able to be with it and not be taken out.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
That if I can, because what did Tim need at that point? I'm with you, Tim.
Yeah.
It's all right. We'll do this together. We'll work this out. It's awful. I know it's awful.
Yeah.
Can I be with you in that?
You know, I had this moment where, you know, there's that quote, like, the same mind can't solve a problem that it came up with. You need a different mind. And it felt like a moment of compassion when I knew I was going to come here. I knew I was going to get the same opinion.
Yes.
And it felt like, well, instead of the temptation was to go back and still beat myself up for being so desperate. But I felt compassion in that moment because what else would that mind do? Like, what else would that person do that situation? Like, that's all the only pair of glasses I had.
Yes. Exactly. So that's the good news, right?
Yeah.
Because what you recognize, you didn't go back and beat yourself up.
Right. Yeah.
You could allow yourself to get beaten or choose to come here.
Right.
And you chose to came here. Anyway. So, but the point is, right, Tim, that let's just say there was no group for another 3 weeks.
Right.
That's why we want the relationship with the mentor to be something that in those dark places, even when the mentor doesn't show up, you keep at it.
Mm.
Right?
Okay.
Because the depth of the identification is so great that oftentimes you have to talk into the right hand till you get to the place of really what's going on with me. Because if you're up here, I just want this to go away, or whatever, there is no response. Because we haven't made the movement to the compassion from which that response is possible to come back.
Okay.
And so the absence of the response is not the absence of the mentor. It's the absence of the movement, which we have to practice, right? I mean, that's why we do two-handed recording exercises as skills training. authentically, I could get to the bottom of the well as soon as I pick up with my right hand. As soon as I put it into my left hand, I can move into a process of listening to whatever is on the right hand. No matter what it is, I can listen to what is in the right hand. As soon as I press record on the left hand, I can move into a process where I can access that compassion for that person.
I see.
It's piano skills. I'm playing three scales over and over again, so that in the big league, when I don't have any reserves, those tracks have been laid. I need to put my attention there, and that process gets turned on for me.
So in keeping with the school theme, it's, if you like, prerequisite courses to go through.
Yeah, it's the basic skills.
Yeah.
I can sit on the cushion, and no matter what happens, I'll get myself to the cushion and breathe. Right? Because that's what I'm holding on to for life to come to me. When I have no reserves to go to life.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel so amazingly grateful that this choice is here and available to me.
And that you practiced so that through all of that anguish, that track was there. It was laid. Right? So you, no matter how much the resistance was, you could see it, you could get on it, and you could get here. That's what we're talking about.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you. Phil.
Well, that was something. So basically what you're saying is that what I'm hearing, I don't know if that's what you're saying, but that rising out of the phoenix rising out of the ashes is just accepting and living with just the way life is, which meaningless or whatever it is, in any other place. So we have these dark nights, or particularly maybe one really huge one, more.
At least once a year.
At least once.
Usually December 5th. Go ahead.
and there's there's nothing there, but I always call it the faith that I know I had faith once, kind of thing.
Bingo. I knew I, because. Because I think that's it. It's not. It's the place where I don't have faith.
Right.
That my faith has been taken away. That I have to find faith.
Yeah, and it was just for me. It was just that memory that I had faith once.
Yeah.
So I know it exists.
And I know I would find it.
Yeah, and so there it stopped. It didn't stop the awful, but it stopped the despair, kind of.
Yeah.
But
not quite.
Not quite, but it leveled it out, so that it didn't hit like suicide or anything.
Yeah, well, it improves, right?
Yes, then it was kind of...
yes, there's a little bit of... Yes, yes. Well, and I don't know if this is your experience, right, but my experience of that, Phil, is that what I gain in every one of these is an appreciation for the pattern.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I start to recognize it.
Yeah.
And what the calm that comes into going to these challenging places for me comes from the knowing that I am being led. I actually don't lose that in the dark night. Not anymore.
Right,
the first time
right.
I went through it, when I had no idea what was going on, it was a very different experience.
Yes.
But I've started to notice that there's always a little bit of consolation.
Uh-huh.
Something or the other will let me know that whatever you call it, God or the intelligence that animates is close.
Yes.
Not reachable, not available, not in my awareness of how, but somehow or the other
still there.
Still there.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, and it can't, it, you know, even when we talk about it, that it, in that whole light, it's a beautiful experience. I mean, not going through it isn't.
No.
But when we realize in the wholeness of what it is, it really is.
Something essential has to be learned.
Yeah.
That's my experience at that place.
Yes, and over the years, basically, it was what, for me anyhow, it's what you described as life being indifferent to us. It's a holy indifference, but it's indifferent. And, you know, that's not the way I was raised, you know.
Yes.
In my Christian culture, you know.
Yeah. It's the only place where, these are words I read this morning, which spoke to me about, you see that is not, that is God, and I'm not it. Instead of thou art that, it's the one place I recognize that the separation of ego is not what I'm looking at. I can, that what I see when I face life is God, and I'm not it.
That
I'm so identified as
the separation you're talking
me
about. Yeah.
That it's quailing at.
Yeah.
And that's how terribleness of it.
Yes, and that's how I guess so much of many of us have been raised, is that it's all out there. I was looking at that just the other day, that and I don't remember what I actually saw at this point in moment in time, but it was like raised as, or just learned that it was all out there, and so what an injustice that was to us, in a sense, to not know that, but that out there is all of me.
Yeah.
And nobody ever said that.
Yeah.
Or do they still do it?
No.
Maybe
in this kind of setting, where you go, oh my God.
Yeah.
Yeah. Literally.
Literally, because otherwise it's, oh my God, you know, and not, oh my God, you know.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the beauties, to me, of the recorder, of the recording, is that besides just the recording and, you know, and all the things we were saying about it, and I think you did kind of say this, is that, to me, it's that relationship. I mean, I can talk to a friend or somebody, and maybe or maybe not, I believe back what they say. I mean, that's a whole other thing. But if I'm doing the recording, then it's like we're becoming,
yes,
you know, a wholeness.
Yes, there's the way, and I love that way you said it, that oftentimes, because we speak from, what is it, Alan Watts, right? The eyes cannot see themselves.
Yeah, right, yeah, he did.
And so the only way we know we are eyes is if the eye gets reflected back to me. One of the ways in which we use the recorder is to witness your life. And when you listen, you have a sense of who this person is.
Yes.
This divinity is.
Yes, because it starts getting all rolled back into one.
Right.
And that keeps growing. That's what was interesting when I first started the love letters, you know, was, I think I said this once before, well, okay, who's it, who is it, who is it? But now it's very clear who it is.
Yes, exactly.
You know?
It's the Zen phrase. First one, then two, then one again.
Yeah.
That's right? Because originally it's all distinct.
Mm-hmm.
Then you begin to see differences.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you see the oneness of it all, it becomes two again, where you can see oneness and two. It's all the same.
Yeah.
But you can see the distinction without the difference.
Yeah. So it's just, this practice is it's a miracle. It really is.
It is.
It really is, because you can't see these things without having this kind of a practice.
And most people don't want to. So
I don't think so. No, because it wrecks that pattern of well, something, somebody taking care of me, even though that is so, but it's not in that way.
That everything that I need is outside, and if I'm unhappy, I just have to go switch the outside in order to be happy
again.
That's
right. I'm in control of my old age sickness and death. I mean, all these really important things that we hang on to if we don't realize there's nothing there to hang on to.
Yeah. And we manage through.
Yeah.
Which is so suboptimal to living through.
Oh, I see what you're saying. You manage through instead of living through. Yeah.
Right? Because there's a richness in human existence that we could savor in all of the heights and depths. I remember once Sherry saying, you know, I don't want to take depression meds for bipolar because I don't want to miss the high side.
Right.
Because it cuts off the peaks and it cuts off the troughs.
Yeah.
But if you learn how to be present and have receptors to life, however blocked they are, then the whole journey is in unblocking them to be able to be fully alive to life.
Exactly. In all its faces. And again, the beauty of practice is we can see it. So if we're not always going to live in a euphoria.
No.
Probably.
Well, because God hides in very dark places.
Right. And that the point is, and we know that, and we can see that, and we can look at that, and we know, okay, here I am down here, or here I am up here, and it's all life. Yeah, it has nothing to do
with it. Well, and I think that's what we train, right? I would say that I was conditioned to be much more in dark places than light places. Mm-hmm. And so my work is to be able to develop receptors to beauty and joy and laughter, mm-hmm. because I'm very, very receptive to the other side,
right?
And so that for other people, it's, I have receptors for all the joy and the happy things, and I'm not able to face the fact that life is booked.
Yeah, that's true. They're both, we all have the different ways. Yeah. Yeah. So, anyhow, I'm very grateful.
Me too.
Thank you, Beth.
Beth.
Yeah. I want to say yeah to all of it. It's been interesting over the holiday. I was visiting family and practice
work.
Was not there.
Oh, I see.
Well, yes, it was very present. No, I mean, let me put it this way. The practice that I had done before I went came into play beautifully. It was great. But I didn't meditate. I barely recorded and listened. I just, found that I was going through, and I would hear a voice come in going, I didn't listen to the radio show. I mean, it all just, and it was fascinating to get to the end and then get back here and go, okay, it's almost like I want to start fresh. Mm. Like, there was some cheating happening. Like, I decided I wanted to meditate every single day because I wanted to get a certain count on my app, you know, and it had to be every day, and if it was 11:55 at night and I was going to bed, I'd put it on and say, okay, I'm just going to breathe and listen for 5 minutes, but I got that 5 minutes in, and it was kind of like, okay, who's really doing this? So I feel like I didn't really put it into terms until just hearing this whole conversation of, I think what kind of happened was, trashing a lot of the expectations or the fudging or the, you know, okay, I'll just, if I just kind of sit, but I'm not really sitting, then that'll count because I've got the timer. You know, it was that kind of thing. And it was like, when I came back, I just was... It was a beautiful place in the sense of no self-hate. I mean, that was probably one of the biggest things that I got out of it, was just no self-hate. But that's what's happened. That's what happened. My parents are in tremendous flux, and it was just, you know, just to be with them and just to, you know, all of that kind of stuff. And so there was also a place of really accepting that as a Virgo, I'm not perfect, which is really hard too. That there's all this bad behavior, that there's all this, you know, dare I say it, narcissistic behavior. You know, this very ego, because at some level I would wager that there's a sense of narcissism in us all, because we all have an ego, and it's the ego that's the I that wants all the attention in that sense. But I had to really recognize, you know, there was a place of really recognizing who it was that, you know, that how the ego was acting to get what it wanted. Mm. You know, all this time. And like really recognizing that I'm not who I thought I was.
Okay, so hang on, Beth, because you're going to have to unpack this a little bit.
Yeah.
Because, so to me, there's a way in which, if we're really present, as you were with your parents, there might not be room for structures.
And maybe that's, yeah, what it was.
Right? Mm-hmm. So there's a very, if I live in a certain way and I can have structures that support me, then one of the things we learn when we leave structured environments to go to unstructured environments is to make agreements. So the next time you go, you make an agreement with yourself that says, for the next 1 week, I am actually not going to do any of these things other than maybe try to record and listen before I go to bed.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's the takeaway, which is I still want to have some touchstone to practice throughout, but let me come up with what would be a reasonable and appropriate way to keep that if it's supportive and possible.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, exactly.
And so then, instead of that, what I think you're pointing to is conditioning had all of these sort of not very whole ways of trying to get points, right?
Machinations.
Yes, machinations. And so if I'm, what is the way that we say it in practice, right? If I'm afraid and therefore I'm good, I'm only afraid. Right. So if I'm not really practicing, it doesn't matter if I got the counter by the timer or anything. I'm not being present,
I'm
because what's
present.
Practicing is ego.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. Maybe that's what I really saw.
Right, so you came back and went, okay, well, that was a takeover.
Yeah.
And I feel, because, not because I'm that. Because
no.
We don't want to take ownership of that,
right?
That was conditioned mind, and it was doing its conditioned behaviors. And I'm not that.
What I just saw was the disidentification is the ability to get out of self-hate.
That's right. That's not
it
me.
Really is.
I got taken over.
Yeah.
Don't want to do that anymore.
Yeah.
So here's the purity of my practice that I'm coming back to.
Yeah.
Right? And the takeaway, if we look at it from that second opinion place, is, okay, what did I learn? Be present is what I'm practicing. If I can be present and loving in a very high flux situation, then I'm doing all the practice that I need to be doing.
Yes.
And if I need some extra support, which I learned from that flux situation, then that's what I will take with me on my next trip.
Right. Exactly.
Because we don't only get one shot at it.
So true. So, along those lines.
So just to make sure, right, that is, you are not narcissistic.
No, not authenticity.
That's right. So we don't ever want to claim that was you.
That's great. Yeah, I appreciate that. I appreciate that delineation because, and I wasn't taking it as, in fact, I mean, when identified, I can see how there are narcissistic behaviors.
Yes.
That might be the more not technically correct, but are really the real truth.
Yes.
Of it.
And the real truth of it is that is ego.
That is ego.
And we all have egos.
Yeah.
But that's not what we are.
But it's not what we are. And one of the things that I had said to Sherry a while back was, you know, I'm coming into a place where it's really live the practice. Like the message I'm getting is live the practice, you know, just really, really have that be. So, what happened this morning was I have the cat who got spayed now. So that's good news. And so no more yelling and no more stuff. And but I had to keep her confined because she had the surgery and everything, and she got out and she got into my bedroom and she got under the big bed. And I went with my arm to, you know, try to scoop her out, and I couldn't reach her. And I thought, well, what's longer that I could use to kind of just scoop her out? And I thought, a broom, you know, okay, I'll go get a, you know, broom handle, and then I can sweep it under the rug. You know, I wasn't going to hit her or anything, but, you know, just like kind of do this kind of thing. And then I went, but wait a minute, that's still, as kind as I wanted to be with a broom, that was a kind of a chasing out, like a get out, you know, like kind of that intention. And I said, what would be more kind? Went and got treats. Started laying them in the hallway. Sure enough, here she comes, chasing the child. And I'm just like, I'm overjoyed that these little things are happening.
Yeah.
That are saying, what's a different way to do this than how you were taught? How, you know, it's not the first thing, you know, even the first thing that drops in, even if I can say, well, it could be life's impulse. The second thing that I'm kind of looking at is that kind. You know, it's kind of like, is that kind, is it necessary? Is it,
yeah.
Anyway, but it's a little different. Is it kind? Is it loving? Is it caring?
Yeah.
You know, for everybody involved. And it was just this,
oh, yeah. That's when we, I worked with you earlier this week.
Yes.
Where the impulse to be kind.
Yes.
That is, I love that. To me, that is what makes this practice unbelievably beautiful.
Yeah.
Is we practice and we want to yell. We practice, we want to yell. We want to practice and we want, the first thing that comes up is identification.
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
at some point,
yeah.
I want to yell, but wait a minute. Do I really want to yell?
Yeah.
And then whatever I practice, I want to be kind, drops in, right?
Yeah.
That's my highest intention.
Yeah.
And so that thing about living the practice drops in, and then at the place you go to, really, I don't have to do that with the broom. I can be kind.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have to be the first impulse.
No.
Because it's not time for it to be the first impulse.
Yeah.
And at some point, you might have just gotten the treats.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
Exactly. Yeah.
It's that. It's an evolving, because it takes an erosion of the self.
It does.
Which only comes with showing up and being willing to be annihilated over and over and over again.
You know, that's my favorite. That's my favorite ever. And I think that's what was resonating with me tonight, of hearing all of the previous conversations of, to really be with that part that just looks so bad.
Yeah.
And to say that that's there too. You
yes.
know, that's there too. But it's not, it doesn't have to obscure. And I think you guys use this, you and I talked about it earlier this week. It doesn't have to be, the window is still there. Even
yes.
if it's so mucked over. The
yes.
window is still there, even if all the veils are there, and even if all the veils are there, it's the basis of it,
yeah.
of authenticity, of that which animates, is there.
Yes. Here's the way I was looking at it earlier, that intrinsic purity is never tainted, right?
Yeah.
And so what we recognize over the bad behavior,
mm-hmm.
the self-hating place would be, I'm bad,
mm-hmm.
or I did something bad, or I host something through which I don't have the ability to see that I can be manipulated into doing something bad. Whatever
right.
level of practice
right.
we're looking
where,
for, that,
where
we
are.
Are, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But to go to, yeah, that was unskillful.
Yeah.
But there's nothing wrong with her.
Yes, exactly. It's that unconditional love again. It's the unconditionality of, I accept whatever's here.
Yes.
I just accept it because that's the only way I'm going to get through it.
Well,
go through it.
Go ahead.
No, we're back to that quote that I, Marcus Aurelius,
yes.
what stands in the way becomes the way.
Yes.
Right,
well, in that place, right, that where the only reason I would project that the only reason the kindness was available, that actually it's the reverse, right? The fact that the kindness was available to the cat implies that it's finally available to you.
Oh, amen, sister.
Absolutely.
Oh, gosh.
You are being treated by the only way to work with Beth is to use the broom.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That was the way that I was motivated, that got me going. And I'd have to say that doing the love letters at night, and I can only write a page. It's one page. I tried to do love letters a long time ago, and they were, too long and just fell out of it. And it was like, okay, I'm limiting myself to a one-page love letter.
250 words.
A minute and a half at the most is the recording. But once you do it for a month and you have 30 of them, that's like, 45 minutes of listening right there. I mean, it gets me out of bed, through my morning routine, and into breakfast. It's like, gosh, yeah. That's such a wonderful thing of just everything that says, hey, you're doing great. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
I love you no matter what.
Yeah. So powerful.
It is so powerful.
Yeah. And I would say that from the ego perspective, it's like 2 minutes is going to make a difference in your life. It is unbelievable the amount of 2 minutes. It's the 10%, but you give 10%, the universe gives the 90%.
Yeah.
That's all it requires, that you have a direct open line to life anytime you need it, because you have invested in cultivating that path.
Yes, and along those lines of having built the track, I mean, to me, that's what I've gotten out of different kinds of spiritual scriptures, is any practice you do is never lost.
No.
It's always being laid down.
And because it's been laid down once, even if it gets covered over, repair maintenance work is easier
than
buying
new track. Oh my God. It's so true. Dusting it off is very different than digging it out. So, I find tremendous, and along that line of the whole faith, that really is such a linchpin of getting it, that faith, how do I say this? I mean, you guys said it so well, so that's not going to be easy to add to it, but it is that place of walking where you put your foot down and you just know that you're going to be met with solid ground.
Because it's never been our experience otherwise.
It's just not a knowing. It's just a leap of faith. It's just, yeah. Thank you. Thank you for being here.
Anyone else before we go? Do you have something, Tim? You good?
Sure. No, I had just all of that was so, so helpful. And I'd forgotten about the way of transformation and how that was a really good, I was like, wow, that's one of my favorites. And, to kind of, and also what you were talking with Phil before about having the faith that I had faith.
Yes.
At one point. Is just tremendously important. I don't think I have anything else.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you.